Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender bone-in pork back ribs for $3.49 a pound with your card. Then get 16-ounce packages of juicy strawberries for $1.99 with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcasts. And I just want to mention for our audio podcast listeners, because I know that they've been following the story very closely. At New York Comic Con, they announced Hush 2 by Jim Lee and Jeff Loeb, and immediately put on sale for only 52 hours exclusive Hush 2 t-shirts. And I got mine today, which I'm very excited about. It says very clearly, you can read, you know it's Hush 2.
Hatoosh.
Hatoosh. You got to say it like Kung Fu Panda, right, Pete? Hatoosh.
Oh, nice reference there.
Thank you. Pete loves Kung Fu Panda. Right,
Pete? Yeah, there's no doubt about that, based on his enthusiasm alone. That's a fun... Here's the thing. That's a shirt that exists right in the middle of, is it a joke or is it not a joke?
100%.
And I don't know... I usually know which side to fall on here, but I don't know.
I'm not sure. That's why I never buy this stuff immediately, but seeing that, I was like... This is very stupid, and I love it. So,
yeah.
As Stray Bullet points out, it looks like you're really into hash.
Oh.
Bad hash.
Bad hash.
Bad hash.
Bad hash. Bad hash, good guest tonight.
Yay!
Because later on in the show, we are going to have Caroline Cash to talk about pee pee poo poo. But first, we are going to have on two awesome guests, Matt Wagner and Kelly Jones. Woo-hoo. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome them into the stream.
Yeah, welcome, welcome.
Welcome, guys. So you are working on, I guess we can call it a cycle. Maybe that's the best way of describing it.
Ooh.
About Dracula. Series, a series of OGNs, original graphic novels.
Yeah. That's probably a more reasonable way of calling it. Yeah, so about Dracula and reimagining and retelling the origin. You currently are Kickstartering the second volume, all about the brides, but I don't want to blow up your spot. We were talking about some news about the first volume before you got on. Do you want
to? Yes, we just found out. Well, first of all, Alex, I want to say to your t-shirt, Gesundheit.
Burn. T-shirt burn.
Yeah, we just got the news that the Dark Horse, you know, again, we are Kickstartering this. We knew from the beginning we wanted to do that. The Kickstarter is the only place to exclusively get the hardcover editions.
Yeah.
But we also knew we wanted to reach a larger audience. Some people don't pay attention to Kickstarters at all. They only keep their eyes on traditional publishers and traditional retail. So Dark Horse Comics is releasing a trade paperback version of all four of the eventual novels, book one of which came out last week, and we just found out it sold out from Diamond in 2 days.
Hey, oh, congrats.
Nice.
That is awesome.
Very fun.
Yes, and pretty nice little gift there.
I drew it while on hash. So,
what a great resonance for you on that.
Well, and the Kickstarter is obviously doing fantastically as well. Mm-hmm. You got another 3-ish days on it. It closes down November 1st. You started off, I think this was the same goal as the first one, if I remember correctly, $666.
Yeah, very cheeky $666. Mm-hmm.
Good.
And you're up to $175,000 right now.
Ooh,
so,
yep.
Doing pretty well. Talk to us about this book and about the Kickstarter. I mean, obviously, you've seen repeated success with these over and over again. That's got to feel pretty good.
Only twice now. But
twice.
That's a pattern.
I said it twice.
But that's going to make you feel pretty good, I think, going into the third and fourth.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Kelly and I have been buddies for decades, and we had always wanted to do something big together, and we had always kind of threatened each other with it over the years, and it just never quite lined up with our lives and careers. I had been brewing on this idea about Dracula for a long time. How do you do something new with Dracula? I always wanted to try my hand at it. Finally, I got the idea. I called Kelly and I said, are you serious about what we've been chatting about forever and a day because I got an idea I think that's perfect for both of us, but it's going to be a commitment. It's going to be, you know, 4 or 5 years of our lives, you know. And luckily it was the right time for him. It was the right time for me. And, you know, I've been involved in the independent comics market for over four decades now. And the whole Kickstarter motif is a kind of new model in the industry. And I had never tried it before. I said to Kelly, I think we should try this as a Kickstarter. He was all for it. So we went ahead full steam with it. Now I will say, we had no fucking clue how to do it. We did hire help. David Hyde and Superfan Promotions were just tremendous help in every step of the game. And our fulfillment service, James Aquilone from Monstrous Books, really ties it all together at the end. And like I said, we made a deal with Dark Horse then to reach a larger audience after the Kickstarter. But again, Kickstarters are the only place to get the hardcovers. The hardcovers also feature these incredibly beautiful end papers drawn by Kelly. There's, in fact, two sets. There's a different set in the front, a different set in the back. They are absolutely gorgeous. Again, only place to get those is the Kickstarter. And we have a ton of other cool shit. We have a portfolio of plates of 11x17 offset printing, beautiful, beautiful plates of Kelly's, some of the best examples of his black and white work for inside the first book. We have a gorgeous Giclée print, 18x24 print from book 2. We have merch.
Very cool. Just to mention for anybody listening, it's an awesome
Orlok Press. Because of course Count Orlok was the name of the vampire knockoff, the Dracula knockoff in Nosferatu, the first adaptation.
Yeah.
And we have a bunch of T-shirts, so there's a lot of rewards tier levels, enough to please everybody. Digital too, if your wallet is very slim. So something for everybody.
Why is the Kickstarter model like so good? Why was that the way to go here for this?
Well, Kel, you have the answer to that.
Total freedom. I don't have to worry about a publisher or an editor or someone saying you shouldn't draw that, you can't draw that, why are you drawing that, that's going to alienate, offend, or whatever. And the whole point is to get what Matt's idea for this was pretty amazing and pretty raw. And so any way you can remove that many impediments from us to you is a plus.
Makes it direct, yeah.
And I think that the success of this so far, the interest, the excitement, the reaction is clear proof that I was always told when I started doing this, if you can get what your idea is to the reader through all of those hoops, you can have a pretty good career. And I've been lucky enough to get that just right time, right place, right time. This, I don't have to wait for the right place, right time, or some fluke or some luck. And people will trust that. The only thing Matt and I have to do really is get it out on time. And that's easy for us. The rest is...
Yeah, again, we have between us, I almost hate to say this, we have
over 80
years of experience in the industry.
I keep thinking like I draw in a rocker now, but it's... but it is something that I think is pretty powerful when it's directly from us. All we have to do is get it to you. We don't have to go through some approvals. We don't have to have someone saying that's going to upset somebody or, oh, my God. It's like, well, that's Matt's intent, is to upset somebody. You know, it's like pretty upsetting material. And
which, of course, you know, that's a good segue to talk about for your viewers and listeners that don't know what the project is. As I said, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out an approach to Dracula because, of course, it's been done to death, right? I mean...
I've heard of it.
You've heard of it, yeah. I maintain that Dracula is the most famous literary character of all time. Literally, all around the world, if you say the word Dracula to anybody, they're going to have an idea of what you're talking about, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Sherlock Holmes maybe comes close, Frankenstein comes close, but I don't think any of them compare with Dracula. Everybody immediately drops into the Hungarian accent. They imagine the widow's peak and the cape and all that.
Okay, you know? but for me, if you guys have read it, you know it's completely different from anything you've seen before with Dracula.
Yeah.
It's utterly original. And so, it's completely in canon. It's,
so, yeah, that was our whole thing, was I decided, look, let's stick as close to the book as humanly possible, which we will do religiously. But if you've read the original novel, you know that as compelling and magnetic as Dracula is, he's not in the book very much. He's not on stage, right? I mean, when Jonathan Harker goes to the castle at the beginning of the book, he's there quite a bit. As soon as he goes to London, he's kind of gone. You know, I equate it to how overwhelming a presence Hannibal Lecter is in Silence of the Lambs. He's only on screen 16 minutes out of that whole movie, yeah. You know? But the book is full of all these tantalizing details and hints about Dracula, about his history and how the history of the castle, etc. And I thought, well, there's my in. We'll tell those stories. We'll take those hints and we'll extrapolate on them, and we'll tell the stories that are hidden in the shadow of the novel. So we are not going to adapt the novel. You're not going to see the novel adapted yet again, which has been done in film and on stage and in comics ad nauseum, right? So you won't see Jonathan Harker go to the castle. You won't see Van Helsing. You won't see Mina. You won't see Lucy. We're going to show you everything else.
Well, talk cool. to us a little bit about this volume, The Brides, then. Obviously, per the name, it is focusing on Dracula's brides, going back in time, fleshing out their origin, no pun intended. So, again, they're in it even less. So, yep. What?
A couple of pages. They're only in a couple of pages. Which, again, is testimony to what a kind of searing narrative moment and an enchanting presence they are, right? There's Kelly's tremendous artwork for the limited edition of the of book two. So they're in the book, and again, they're very memorable. They show up in so many of the film adaptations. There's almost no information about them in the book. The only indicator of anything different between the three of them is that one of them is fair-haired. The others two are dark. And she seems to be of slightly higher aristocratic or noble class compared to the other two, because they both defer to her when they're going to prey on Jonathan Harker. You have the right to go first, you know. So that gave me just this very open well of here's three women. You can tell their stories, you know, and you can define their characters, and you can define what about them Dracula found attractive, why he chose them, and what, how they changed after they became a vampire. Cause of course you don't stay the same person. Although we did try to make it seem that Dracula was the same person in book one. Of course, he doesn't become a vampire till kind of the end of the book. And we really made it so that he's that same guy. He's that same guy at the beginning of the book as he is at the end of the book. He's a fucking asshole. And like Hannibal Lecter, he's a magnetic asshole. He's a charismatic asshole, you know. And again, I've written Grendel for 40 years. I have a little bit of experience.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah.
Well, Kelly, what about you? What was your artistic approach to The Brides? Obviously, you're working together with Matt on this, but I have to assume that you put some of your distinct style into fleshing them out.
Oh, sure did.
The thing with The Brides, to me, was that as Matt wrote them as what they were before Dracula turns them. So you have to make them... Not just be beautiful women, but interesting. And why would he choose them? And in that, that's where the natural eroticism of it comes from. Just they're real women. And then when they become turned, they become, I think, mesmerizing. I think they're absolutely amazing. And
the victims think they're mesmerizing too.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're under their spell a little bit.
Yeah. I think
you're all right.
The job, the job is to make you under their spell.
Yeah.
And, it's working on all of us.
Yes. And I think that, that having now drawn those sequences and seen them finished, it's probably amongst the best moments or sequences I've ever drawn, but it's because you believe in these women. You believe what they are, so they become even more compelling.
Now, Kelly, you mentioned that Matt, because you're operating outside of the system on Kickstarter, was able to sort of go off the chain.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how you were able to sort of cut loose?
It's easy. I don't worry about what anyone's going to think. I'm doing it to satisfy Matt first for his story, but for me, for what I would want to see. And when you do that, you realize that we're not, I don't know. I look at the, as Matt told me in the beginning, he wanted like what Heavy Metal magazine was in the late 70s. And that was pretty raw stuff, but it was very, very intelligent. And so out of that, I thought, okay, what did those guys do? They didn't worry about it. They just sat down and did it. And whatever came out, came out. I didn't go into this thinking, what do I show and what do I don't show? How explicit I get or not? It was like, does this serve what Matt's writing? Because Matt's writing was there. And it takes over.
That's the way it feels. It feels very naturalistic. It is, you know, bold and gory and sexy and all that stuff.
Who wants to see something restrained or with?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to see a shadow or a drape over something. It's just there. It is.
Fuck drapes.
Yeah,
the real takeaway here.
Unless it's the drape. It's the drape of Dracula's cloak, which of course Kelly draws so magnificently.
And I think if you have context and a strong story, a very strong story, it makes it that much more powerful. It goes beyond exploitive to actually erotic. That's where I think you draw the line. So and it's classically portrayed. I mean, it is a great epic, a great tragedy, and a great horror story all at the same time.
And you know, in concocting the story of these three women, you know, one of my challenges is to avoid any sense of modernity. Avoid trying to shoehorn in a contemporary political agenda. You know, I think there's times and places for that, most certainly, but I just didn't feel it was right here, you know. So, you know, after he's turned all three of these women, and they're all distinct women, they all have a certain fire to them. They all are the sort of thing that would attract a warlord like Dracula. And yet in no way does he consider them their equals, or no way were they on equal footing. He's the lord of all he surveys. He treats everything that way, you know?
No, there is a love he has for them, but it is on his terms.
It's on his terms. It's also the real Vlad never had children.
Yeah.
So these are the first things he's ever created. And he finds he feels a sense of responsibility towards them that he didn't quite expect, you know. And of course, that's self-centered. If they fail in some way, that means he has failed in some way, you know.
That way about my kids as well.
The other thing is, I was talking about this a little bit earlier today. Ever since Anne Rice, the contemporary approach is to make vampires ambisexual. You know, they are sensuous, they're consumptive, and they live for centuries. So why would they have any distinction between sexual tastes? It's all good, right? And there's just no evidence of that in the novel, though. We see Dracula only prey on women, right? And so I was like, how am I going to explain that without, again, getting some sort of contemporary political viewpoint in here? And so I finally took my inspiration from the way certain predators treat their prey, play with their prey, like cats do, because we've all seen cats bat around a mouse till it's just broken. And orcas will toss live seals in the air sometimes for over an hour before they eat them, you know. And if you're going to anthropomorphize that, people will say, oh, that's so cruel. But of course, the predator doesn't understand that human concept, right, you know.
I mean, an hour sounds excessive. That sounds a lot.
Okay, but there's got to be a reason, right? And behavioralists will tell you, well, the animal is honing its predatory skills. You know, that never quite made sense to me because they've already caught the thing, right? So my thinking is, what if it just makes it taste better? Yeah, what if that adrenal mega surge that poor animal's suffering and fear shoots through its body just marinates and tenderizes and seasons that meat to where that predator just really loves it, right? So that was my explanation, is that to Dracula, women just taste better. And he expounds upon it in a very gourmand sort of fashion, a very brutal gourmand sort of fashion. Yeah,
you know what else tastes better? Not to swerve the conversation, but cocktails taste really good. And we, every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans. This is true, named Brent Macris, a.k.a. Straight Bullet, who creates crafts a cocktail for the show. And this week he created Kiss of the Brides.
Oh, damn. On, buddy.
Yeah, it's gin, Campari, Amaro, cherry liqueur, lemon juice, and maraschino cherry.
Oh, so please make sure you send me that.
Yeah, 100%.
And he says he has two tattoos designed by me. Awesome. Thanks, pal.
Yeah, I like that.
But he needs a third. Are you ready?
Well, there's lots of Grendel art to choose from. So.
Yes, there is.
Yes. We got a question here from YouTube. This is from Derek Mainhard. For Kelly, Bernie Wrightson drew a definitive version of Frankenstein, which you contributed to beautifully in Frankenstein Alive Alive. Did that experience inform your approach here?
Well, certainly it did. I mean, you.
Yeah, Derek.
Wrightson
did.
Wrightson, wow. Wrightson made it very clear what he wanted. And he told me what he wanted, and he showed me that whole thing. But then he said, "Do as you please." He was explanatory, but he didn't want me to just do what he had done. He wanted it alive, so he was very, very cool about it. He was very ill at that time, but he knew what he wanted, and he. He had told me, he said, I know I'm not going to see this finished, but he trusted me to do what it was to finish this book because it was his passion. It was a very strange experience, I'll be honest, talking to someone who was speaking like that. Luckily, yeah. Matt's a very healthy guy, so I don't have to worry on that level. But no, it was. Bring something to this, you know?
You've talked a couple times and you just mentioned it again about like sort of feeling free.
Yeah.
And does that mean like when you are working on other projects in other parts of the comic industry, do you go into it worrying about that restriction or are you pushing back on it there as
I've had it happen enough to where they will say, cut loose, you do. And they say, what are you doing? You know, why did you do this? And I've had that happen, not just at the big publishers, but at even smaller publishers. And it's not so much that something's graphic as much as that it's horrifying. I did a cover for SpongeBob SquarePants where they had said, really make it scary. You cannot do too scary. I had to do it three times because every time I did it, they said, that's too frightening.
That's wild.
That's crazy because I mean we're huge fans of your artwork, and I just have to imagine if I'm running a SpongeBob SquarePants comic, and I'm like, "Get me Kelly Jones." I should know what I'm in for. Well, so that's on that.
Made SpongeBob squirt in his SquarePants.
No, where I got lucky was I was lucky with Denny O'Neill, who just let it go, who just let me do whatever. I was lucky with Richard Bruning on Dead Man, who just let me go, didn't right. control anything. And but the odd thing is, as comics have went from the 90s on, it has gotten more and more constrained as far as that if you're not independently publishing. And I do think that the problem I have with if, for example, if I see explicit gore or something in most books, it's pretty badly done. It's just not frightening, it's there. Matt wrote things where you began to care about people or you began to be invested in people or you began to be invested in the story. So when those things happen, that's when it's horrifying. The atmosphere buildup is what it is. So when I was doing these things under controlled situations, they didn't mind the atmosphere buildup, but the payoffs is what would upset them. And that would change. And I'm just talking like one panel.
Whereas I love the payoff.
Yeah. And that's the buildup.
Bring it on, buddy.
Yeah. The buildup is the thing. So I knew Matt's christening words when I started was if you're worried about something or whatever, just go further. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. And that's all you needed to hear. So I would say anybody creative, if you're told freedom, they're going to love it. Eventually what happens if you do this in the industry long enough is you begin to self-censor, which right. is terrible. And you begin to do it because you just know you're going to have to redo it. So why redo something? Just get it the first time and try to skirt it.
But even so, when you have this freedom that Kel's talking about, you go through a process. I wouldn't call it self-censoring, but staging. You know, you're arranging things so that they have the most impact. It's not just, you know, you don't want 20 pages of just constant gore. You know, you want those moments to strike with a resonant gong, you know.
Well, what you want is a taboo book. It's a book that you don't want your mom reading if you're that age. And that's good. That's heavy metal, you know. That's what it is. And Matt gave me that because what's there is a literary foundation. There is a seriousness to this. Matt's comic script could have easily been developed into a novel and been outstanding. So you know you have the material, the physical material's there. But then it's a comic book, so you want to see stuff. You want that. And if someone gives you the ability to do a true shock in a horror story that isn't cheap, you take it. And Matt gave me like 15 dozen of those. I mean, it's just over and over. Wow. There's these moments. And I'm rarely shocked by things. But his script did, so I knew it would work as a finished book. I knew.
And the opposing side of that is that, you know, as you all know, I'm an artist too, in addition to being a writer. So I feel it's one of my strengths as a writer that I'm writing to the strength of the artist I'm particularly working with at the time, you know. And so the entire time I'm writing this, I'm writing these scenes. I'm like, oh, Kelly's going to fucking kill this. This is going to be amazing. You know? and then it would come back and it'd be better than I had imagined, you know.
It's all of the many years prior to doing this for a living to even during it, it all builds up in you. And so once you get the opportunity to show it, once you get the opportunity, not so much to show an image you already have preconceived in your mind, but the chance that if you get that, you get to show what you would do. And that can be something explicit or it can be or not. I mean, but it's going to be enthralling. But I wanted, you know, Matt wrote something that I know, God, if I had to move now, I would chuck 90% of my stuff because there's no way you can box it and carry it and it'd just be too nightmarish. But these were the books I would keep if I was just a fan, if I was a reader.
Wow.
So I knew I had something good here. And when he told me, look, we're looking at a commitment to 5-6 years, that was the easiest thing I signed up to.
And I think both of us have always approached our projects and our careers that way, in that for me anyway, it's always been it has to thrill me first. The process of creating it, the final product, the story I end up with has to be thrilling to me. If it's not, that's not going to translate to the reader. You know, the reader's going to catch on that it's being forced, that it's fake in some way. You know.
Well, Matt wrote it. Matt writing his own stuff, he can do that. If I'm getting material that I didn't feel was up to it, I always felt, well, I can do something with it. That's generally why they would hire me, because I'm in the mainstream, but I'm orbiting on the very outer ring of that solar system. So they could bring me in, I was accepted by the mainstream, and they would want that edge to it. That I would be told that. What would happen though is a lot of times people will be very fried. I've only had a few editors really stick up for that and say, yep, we're going to do it. We're going to stick with it. The best ones would hide it until it was printing day. You know, they'd show it and then it's too late to do anything about it.
You know? Neil Gaiman and I used to talk about back in the early days of Vertigo when they wouldn't let you use the word fuck.
Yeah.
if you had something controversial, you were concerned whether it would get through, you'd throw a fuck in there and they'd focus on the fuck.
Yeah. There were times
throw them a fuck distraction.
I would be told I would be given notes on something, and I'd sit on the changes until absolutely it had to go in. And I would always, then in those days, you had to send the work in physically. And I'd always put post-its on it going, you know what? I agree. These changes really, really made it better. And it would go through. I never had to change anything. I mean, I took a chance, but it was one of those things where I knew, okay, this would be, and it would be stuff everybody knows, right? To this day, that they would say, oh, that was really good what you did. Well, you know, it's because I put a post-it on there complimenting the editorial decisions.
Well, let me ask you a question slightly off of this, and I think I know the answer based on this discussion, but just announced at New York Comic Con, Vertigo is coming back. I believe you both worked on it separately, not together, right? Yeah. So is that something you would want to be involved in any way, or are you enjoying this process of just doing it independently?
Yeah, they'd have to throw a ton of money at it.
it would have to be stupid money. There's no way they could let us. This would be what they would hope to get, and they wouldn't. They couldn't do it. I mean, they just flat couldn't do it. Mm. So why? You know, if you're free, it's hard.
We're doing our Vertigo book with Orlok Press. Yeah.
No, we're. I think the fact that the book sold out last week in 2 days, that's what they're looking for.
Yeah,
that's what anybody in the industry is looking for.
And you're talking a $30 volume. If it's a $30 volume, why go back and no? Like Matt said, it would have to be stupid money, but to me, guarantees that they would leave Matt's scripts alone. Because everything we love in comics is story, 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 story. Everything. You can have the best art in the world with the crappiest story, and you will forget it. And that's just the way it is. But you can have substandard art, mediocre art with a great story, and you'll keep it. And that is just the nature of a visual medium. It's the irony of it.
Yeah, and Kelly keeps talking about, you know, the only person he's trying to please and appease is me. And, you know, I will admit, occasionally I come to him with a storytelling concern. Like, okay, you know, from a storytelling viewpoint, this panel, blankety, blankety, blank, you know. And he's, you know, I'm pretty good at explaining why. And he's always like, oh, you're right. You know, like, for instance, we went through in book one, we went through 4 different pages of page one.
Yep.
He did one and it was beautiful. And I was just like, okay, for this reason, storytelling reasons, I think we need to readdress this. And tried another one. Finally, we ended up with the perfect page number one.
But that's the way it should work. Getting it, because once it's in print, that's forever. And the momentary, again, you have to trust someone. I had the good fortune of reading a script and I knew what it was. So the trick is to get it to that point that my reaction is going to get the same reaction now when I've drawn it, not just read it. So you if you put your ego out there or worry about it, you're not going to have a good career.
Yeah. And again, we've both been at this for so long. We're used to the fact that stuff isn't precious. Sometimes the story demands that you do this, you know, and it's been a very smooth process as a result, you know.
Well, there's right, and then there's a lot of wrongs. So you want to get right, and if it takes a few wrongs to get it right, it's okay.
That's nice.
I do like that as well. I do want to ask you then where, if you don't mind, where you are in the process. Obviously, first book is done. It's out there. Second book, I presume, is done as well.
It's over halfway finished.
Okay.
Yeah. Script's all done. Kelly's drawing. Book two is, I like to say, bigger, badder, and bloodier. It's actually 30 pages longer than book one.
Yeah. 60 pages penciled and inked.
Wow. Yeah. And any tease you can give for book 3 or 4? Nope. Okay.
Zero. Wow. Zero tease.
Is Dracula in it?
Dracula's in it, yeah. And they are stories that are not in the book.
I will say that you will have no, there's no guess you could give where you'd get it right.
Wow.
Perhaps, but we're not.
Aliens. No guess.
We're not going there yet. Nope. We held back the title of book 2 until you got to the very last page of book 1. It says, coming soon, Dracula book 2, The Brides. So at the end of book 2, it will say, coming soon, Dracula book 3, Boink.
The hats. Yes, got it.
Mission Miami Beach. Is that it?
Yeah. Maybe
smart.
Okay. Dracula on the Moon.
Yeah. I'll read it. I'll read it. Guys, this project is fantastic. Thank you so much for taking so much time to chat with us.
Yeah,
it's been really fascinating to hear all of this. And congrats on all the success. It's going
to
keep doing
again
great,
to your
I'm
viewers.
Sure.
Three more days. There's if you're looking for the hardcovers, the Kickstarter campaign is the only place to get it.
Yeah,
get it.
Awesome. Thanks you guys so much. Have a lovely night.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on. See ya.
Later.
There we go. Once again, that was Matt Wagner and Kelly Jones. The book, if you missed it, is called Dracula Book 2, The Brides. It's on Kickstarter now, as they mentioned, until November 1st. But you can also get Dracula Book 1, The Impaler, from Dark Horse, or maybe not, because it is sold out. So check with your local comic book store about that. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. Stressed out about a holiday gift? Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. That includes some great comic book gifts, ranging from a create-your-own comic book kit if you want to do it solo, to a hands-on class for kids 8 through 12 to learn the fine art of comic book creation with a group. There's even a personalized comic book to turn your family photos into a graphic novel. There's also a spicy nuts kit and an olive-making kit if you don't like comic books, but you probably do because you're listening to this podcast. In case you haven't figured it out yet, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches. They're high quality, unique, and perfect for the superhero in your life of any age. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/comicbookclub. That's uncommongoods.com/comicbookclub for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
And now we are going to bring in our next guest, the multiple award-winning creator of Pee Pee Poo Poo. Pee Pee Poo Poo number 1 is now available from Silver Sprocket. Ladies and gentlemen, Caroline Cash, hello, hey, welcome.
Hello.
Yes, you're on. Hi, sorry.
Well,
thank you for
okay,
your patience.
Cool. Yes, totally. Is my mic working? Everything's good?
Yeah.
Yes,
you're
great.
You're doing great.
We should have warned you a little bit before we just
I got
to
into
you.
It very quickly. I'm very sorry. Me. Yes. So congratulations on all the success. For people who don't know, this is a true life comic strippy collection of bits about your life. They're very funny. They're very personal. And they won, among other things, Eisner Award for Best Limited Series, the Ignatz Award for Outstanding Mini Comic, the Broken Frontier Award for Best Periodical. That's awesome. I know you get this question a lot about the name Pee Pee Poo Poo. I was reading in an interview in the Comics Journal where you're just like, yeah, I just thought it was going to be funny. Was there a point in the awards thing where you're like, maybe I should have changed this? Or are you like, this gets even better each time?
No, it gets better every time because it's the more awards something with a silly name gets. Right, like the funnier it is. It's like
the joke gets better. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, the bit gets better and better and better. So I think it's funnier now.
Yeah. I totally agree. I kind of wish that I was there at the Eisners when they announced that Pee Pee Poo Poo had won the Eisner Award. Were you there? Did you get to accept it?
I got to go. Yeah, my friend let me use her flyer miles, and I got to go to Comic Con. I'd never been. It was really cool. So, pretty good.
What did you think going for the first time and also getting a sick award?
I mean, that's like kind of like the ideal situation.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's pretty perfect.
You go to Comic Con for the first time and you win. it's cool. I a friend of mine is from San Diego, so I'd always heard about how nice it is there. So I was just excited to like also go to San Diego and like see the beach and like walk around and then also see Comic-Con, right? Because I'm so used to the classic indie shows, right? Like I go to SPX every year, I go to TCAF, you know, I do like kind of that circuit of comic shows. Like I've never, it was not only like my first time at San Diego Comic-Con, but it was like kind of my first time at a classic mainstream comics festival, you know? So that was like a cool new thing to like learn about, you know?
Cool, positive new thing? Or because they're very different. Yeah.
They're very different, but indie shows don't have pools. And I feel really good about that. And like, it's cool, you know, it's like there is, you know, I think it's cool that there's costumes and these shows don't have costumes. No one dresses up. Or like most people don't. Like maybe one or two people are like,
you don't get people at your table dressed up as pee-pee-poo-poo characters, meeting you, I guess.
No one's dressed up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or everyone's dressed up as you on the regular.
I don't know. I don't think anyone's dressed up as me, but I could stand to be corrected, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. It was cool. And it was cool to like meet, you know, I worked at a comic book store for years. So I did, you know, I do know some more mainstream stuff through that, even though it was like totally an indie comic shop. It's this bookstore called Quimby's Bookstore. It's in Chicago. And so I know some of that stuff from that, but it was cool to meet like people who make different comics than, right? You know, like people like, oh, like how Batman works, or you know, like that's cool. Like, all the Batman guys were really nice. Like, you know, it was fun.
How are you talking about Chicago? Are you still in Philly based on
I'm in Philly.
I'm currently in Philly for work, so I'm feeling very connected. I was reading your book today. Are you enjoying it more? Have you settled in?
I've settled in quite a bit. Yeah, I like Philly. You know, Chicago, I lived there for like almost a decade. It totally feels like home, but I'm really enjoying having a tropical vacation.
Well, one other thing to talk about with the book, just because this came up in the Twitch comments, this is from Bad Guy, says the numbering on the pee pee poo poo issues is whack. I'm going to say complimentarily whack, because you have the first one, I believe, was number 69. The next one was number 420. The third one was number, I'm going to say 80,085, but it's 80085, which people can figure out if they like. And now we're finally to number one. Why number one with the fourth issue?
So the reason why the issues aren't numbered numerically is because each one is a standalone issue, and unfortunately, even when you tell people like, oh, you don't have to read these in any sort of order, like every issue you can just pick whatever one you want and just go from there, you know, like there's truly no order to them, like story-wise, but if you even when you tell people that, they want to read the very first one.
We crave order. We crave order at all.
Yeah, people crave order even when there is none, and so that's why I originally thought to just not have them be in an order. And the reason why the fourth issue is number one, because I thought the concept of the fourth issue of something being the first issue is kind of fun, like a funny joke on itself.
It's also, I mean, was there anything to the fact, like Justin was saying, it's you moving from Chicago to a new place, so it's a new start? Was that part of it as all as well?
Yeah, that too, you know, and like, I thought, you know, new start, you know, the next issue is not going to be number two, you know, like the next issue has a different number than that. But I just, you know, I thought it would be, I knew I wanted one of them to be number one, and I either thought it should be like something in the middle of the series, or like towards like the end of it should be the first.
Yeah, the very last, like brand new first issue coming at you.
Yeah.
This is something that I think comes up a lot with folks who write true life comics on both ends. Now that you are four issues in and you are plumbing your life for ideas, do you find yourself looking at situations as, oh, okay, here's how I'm going to kind of turn it into a comic? And on the other side, do you get a lot of people being like, oh, that happened to you? That would be a really good thing for your comic book.
Luckily, my friends don't usually say you should write a comic about this, typically. But, you know, I like making myself be like the character, but a lot of the stories are fictional or like extremely fictionalized to some extent, you know, like it's like things that, like, I'm really afraid of losing my phone and my keys in my wallet. So I thought it would be funny to have a strip where I get like monumentally stoned and I get lost at night without like my phone or my wallet or my keys, you know? But that didn't happen. This never happens. I'm really anal about it, but you know, just like stuff like that, you know, or like
things. Well, that makes me want to ask about first date, because that felt so real, true, and emotionally totally made up.
That one's pretty real, except I exaggerated a little bit, but it's pretty real. Yeah.
Well, another aspect of this is influences. In this book, you have a strip that's directly influenced and sort of responding to a strip by Alison Bechdel. I think there are other artists that I could potentially see in your work, but I'm curious to hear from you in terms of who influences you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Dykes to Watch Out For, and I'm a big fan of Charles Burns's work. Mm-hmm. I referenced him on the cover because I was like, he's the greatest cartoonist in Philadelphia. I should, you know, this is the Philly issue because I live here now. He should be the tribute, you know. But, you know, I like when it comes to cartoonists who I haven't directly referenced in the series already, who have really, who haven't as like bold text, like this is the reference, this is the like inspo. Like, I'm a huge fan of Michael DeForge's work. I really love his anthology series Lose. Like, that was a direct like kind of inspo for like the one man anthology of it all. I'm a really big fan of you know, almost all the Koyama Press people, like Patrick Kyle, those were the comics that I first started reading when I first started reading like comics as an adult. And you know, I'm a big fan of Eleanor Davis. I love One Piece. I love One Piece.
That's true from your comic, yeah.
You know,
Well, and yeah. I think I was reading, was one of the first comics you read, or one of the first that really kind of like blew your mind, was Scott Pilgrim, right? Is that?
Yeah.
So what was it about that in particular? We're also very big fans of Scott Pilgrim like everybody else, but what was it about that that really blew you away?
You know, it was one of the first comics that I read that wasn't like in the newspaper or manga. And I think that Brian really did a great job with that comic, with moving your eye across the page, right? Like, he's able to put a lot of jokes into only a few pages, but you get all of like the bullet points, like you get all the jokes, you get, it's so direct. And I really appreciate that, especially for like a story that ends up having quite a few characters, you know? And I probably read it when I was like 13. So I was the perfect target audience. Pretty much all the characters but Scott are gay, which is really cool to me as a 13-year-old. And I, you know, I just thought it was funny. You know? At the end of the day, I think it's great. And I liked the movie, too.
Yeah. I love that it was visual first, though. I feel like most people come at that from the comedy side or the heightened reality side, but I haven't thought of it in that way, that really the visual move is so dynamic for that type of comic.
Yeah, it really works. It makes, like, I feel like there's so many subtle choices that he made that make it really, really, really readable. I guess, like, I think about because I... you don't have to think about that for planning.
Yeah.
About, but it's something I really appreciate about it. You know, like I feel like, especially, and I know that there's like full color versions of it now, but I'm talking like just like the black and white comics. Mm-hmm. That's like what I read and what is somewhere over here. But like, the way that like the actual like black in the black and white comics moves your eye across the page, like without you even like realizing or thinking, having to think about it, because it's so like, it's so considered. I don't know. It's like, it's something to look at. I don't know.
Shout outs to your nerd wall back there. Is there anything you want to point out? Because that's they're very impressive what you got going on.
Oh, this is just my some books.
Don't you have an Eisner Award right over
yeah.
your head?
Yeah, it's hidden behind your head.
Just some books, a couple awards, you know.
Oh, I got a bank that's in the shape of that Sponge meme where he has money right there, too.
Yes.
Nice.
And have a Pokemon card deck. I don't know.
I guess. A lot of hype SpongeBob getting tonight.
Yeah.
And he always should, you know?
Yeah. He means so much to so many.
Every show, we're going to work it into the interview somehow. We're going to talk about SpongeBob. To get back to what you were talking about earlier, I'm just curious. We're very much more in the mainstream side of things, and that's where we sort of concentrate. But what is the indie comic scene like from your perspective, particularly now that, I mean, we're not actually beyond COVID, but beyond like the shutdown, where I feel like we talked to people for a couple of years where they're like, I wrote 1 million comics while I was trapped inside. And then they were slowly starting to come back into comic conventions, start to share things. From your perspective, has that changed things at all in terms of direction of the art style, direction of the conversation, et cetera?
Like, has COVID changed the direction of the indie
comic? No, I mean, I guess to simplify the question, what's the indie comic scene like right now? I overcomplicated it.
Totally. I think it's really fun right now. I mean, there's so many cool comics that are being made that then I get to read and have a great time, right? And I don't know. I just feel like there's more and more people getting into indie comics and reading indie comics and making indie comics. And the more people and the multiple different perspectives that get into making comics, the better, right? So you can go and read a book about almost anything. And it's so sick. And if you haven't, you know, I really would recommend looking into my publisher, Silver Sprockets, other titles if you're like, indie comics or like you're curious, you know. I really love Zabo's work. She's a good friend of mine. She has some really funny books from Sprocket, or Leo Fox's work. There are two other Sprocket people whose stuff is just amazing. But you know, I mean, I'm kind of biased that I like
just a
little
bit
more than Watchmen, but that's okay.
Nice hot Watchmen rec coming out right here.
I recommend any like Alan Moore interview. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great rec.
I haven't read There was that one that came out with him the other day, and I've been dying to read that, and I just have it in a section where he's called like fandom is toxicity or something like that was the quote.
He's delightful and right as always, you know. But
yeah, he's come through. He's ready to take his name off everything, including the interview he's currently giving. Like, he's like, I'm out on this.
I can't blame him, you know.
No, yes, exactly. Get it.
Yeah.
A couple of other projects to ask you about, though. You either are taking over or took over Nancy for a little bit, right?
I got to be a guest cartoonist on Nancy for a while. Olivia was taking a sabbatical because she had just been doing the strip nonstop for years. And, you know, she hit me up and was like, you want to draw our favorite comic for a minute? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So.
Well, what was it like jumping into that style then?
Oh, it was great. I mean, I got a Nancy tattoo.
Wow.
I'm kind of
prime location too. Yeah, that's a strong Nancy.
I'm kind of a Nancy super fan, so I know how to draw her. So it was fun to jump in and get to like kind of do whatever. And Olivia was my editor, and she was super, super helpful. And she just like understands the character so well that I could text her or email her and be like, okay, I think that there's a joke here, what do you think it needs? And she would just immediately be like, Nancy should be frowning more. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Of course.
You're so right. And then constant Nancy note, you know? And it was my first time doing like an all ages comics. That was the only thing that I was like, okay, I have a lot of ideas for a Nancy, but they aren't actually like an all ages strip, you know? It's like Nancy kills JFK or something. I can't put this in this, you know? Like,
that's tough. Somebody else killed him, so I don't know if she's gonna pull that off.
I think it was her, but
you think so?
Nah.
Huge revelation on this show.
I know. Yeah. I've done the research, and I really think it was her.
Call Oliver Stone. He's got to remake the movie.
He should.
And you have another project coming up. You have a graphic novel coming out through Drawn and Quarterly. I know that's a little mysterious, but anything you can tell us about that?
I finally have a title. I think we're gonna announce it whenever we announce it. But I finally have a title, and it's even better than Pee Pee Poo Poo.
Wow, flex.
High bar.
Not possible.
I don't think so.
Nothing more core.
I think you guys are gonna be like, wait.
Yeah.
You've done it again. It's just as stupid, but it's gonna be like, you know, Sprocket's gonna be putting out a very large Pee Pee Poo Poo collection eventually. But then this is gonna be kind of my first long graphic novel with a cast of characters. It's one cohesive story. I'm really excited. I love working on more than one thing at once, so it's fun to have Pee Pee Poo Poo and be working on it and be able to do all these like little one-off gags that don't have to fit together like in a story, you know? And then have the narrative. And the narrative is like dyke drama.
Yeah. So are you just like sliding between like two giant like dyke drama short? Dyke, you're just like
exactly.
On the desk?
Yeah, so it's fun. You know, it keeps it from, because whenever I try and work on one thing, I get kind of burned out. So working on two things, I can keep the momentum on both. And I'm really excited. I'm almost done. Like, I've been trying writing and rewriting it for like the better part of a year, but I'm almost done writing it. And I'm going to go to Montreal soon and just have like a in-person meeting with my editor, Tracy. And I'm really just excited. Hammer it out, you know? And I love John and Quarterly's books, so I'm really excited to be working with
them. Yeah, that seems great. Like a perfect fit. Is the plan also still to do probably about like 6 to 7 issues of Pee Pee Poo Poo and kind of wrap it up, or see where it goes?
So I'm working on the next issue right now, and honestly, I'm having so much fun with it that I thought I was going to do 2 more issues, but I'm thinking this issue, it just keeps getting longer and longer. So I think I'm going to put out next summer 1 mega issue. And it might be the last one. It'll be the summer of Pee Pee Poo Poo. It's a reference to Dirty Plot. It's a reference to my New York Diary. I got Julie's Bravo on it, so all is well. I'm quite excited, and it's, you know, it's the number that should come after 1.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. A lot of suspicion in the air now, because you said it was not 2. So that's my mind is reeling at that revelation.
Yeah. I think we're going to announce it very, very soon. But like officially. It might already be on the website or something. But I don't think it has yet. But yeah, I think it's going to be like, I think it right now it's looking like it's going to be like 48 pages, maybe in 50. Mm. So we'll see. But it's all about Fashion Week in New York City.
Ooh. All right, great. That's our hood. That's where you live. I can definitely relate to Fashion Week as a person wearing this T-shirt. The book is fantastic. It's
so fun.
It's so much fun. I'm really looking forward to the next one. Really looking forward to everything else coming out from you. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you for all of your content. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. And Pee Pee Poo Poo lasts forever. It could come back anytime, really.
Yeah.
It could, which is fun, you know. The plan right now is to have like a mega issue next year and then figure out what to do with the collection, because I want to also make like a full issue or maybe even 2 issues worth of stuff for the big collection, you know, because
in addition.
I have a scheme.
Well, good luck on this.
That was nefarious. That was a nefarious end to this interview. I have a scheme.
Very honest. Caroline, congratulations on everything. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for being here.
All right. Have a good night.
Have a good one.
You too.
All right, there we go. You can check out, once again, Pee Pee Poo Poo number one is from Silver Sprocket. That is available now. You can get it on their website in a PDF format, and it's really fun, really smart, and well done. So check it out.
So
it's
good.
A great time.
Definitely check it out. Have a good time with your life.
Normally we say don't have a good time with your life, but this is the one case where I think we're going to go against that.
Yeah, well, it's that we often were recommending a comic, and I'm recommending Good Life, and to get that, you need this comic. It's sort of Inside Out, you know?
I agree. It's like the movie
Inside Out 2.
Yeah,
it's Inside Out 2.
I don't know what we're talking about. Why don't we move to our next section, which is my favorite section, because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch.
Think it really hard, especially if you're near.
Just
kind of
like
us.
Pick it up, and that's what's going on. But in the meantime, what's going on? What are you guys drinking, if anything?
I'm down here in Philadelphia, Pete's old stomping grounds, because he has never lived in New York, as we
come on, bro.
Evil Genius. IPA.
Yeah, nice, nice.
Stacy's mom.
Where in Philly are you, bro? You in West Philly? Where are you at?
No, no, no. Don't say your location on the internet.
Well, not the exact location, but you can give us a
general street address. Let me geotag.
Drop a pin in the chat.
Let me drop a pin. I am sort of central Philly currently.
Okay.
Just for like the night. So I'm not hanging. But I love Philly.
Gabrus performed one time in central Philly. It was a good time.
Yeah, I was there.
Oh,
I was
too bad
there.
You weren't there, because
I was also on stage. You saw me perform with Gabrus.
It would be weird if you weren't there. You know what
That's
I mean?
Fucked up. That is fucked up.
What about you, Pete?
I'm not in Philadelphia, but I'm drinking garage beer. I don't have a garage, but I got the beer.
Stacy's mom and garage beer, and Alex clearly lighting up something crazy on his
crazy
end as
spliff.
Usual.
A crazy spliff.
Dude. Fucking twist and torches.
The way Alex says spliff, you know he knows what he's talking about.
You know I'm talking. Yep, I got it. Love eating my marijuana every day. Yum, yum. Frederico Rosa says, what did you guys think about the release schedule Marvel Studios released today? Achievable or dreaming too high? I didn't see a release schedule they officially released earlier today. There was the Disney updated schedule when they took Blade off the calendar.
Oh!
You wanted to watch Blade?
Inevitably took Blade off the calendar.
Wesley Snipes was right.
Probably. You're talking about a Deadpool Wolverine, right?
You can say that Wesley Snipes is right, but that doesn't mean that he knew what he was talking about at all. That's both of those things can be true.
Always bet on black.
Cool. All
right. Okay, Passenger 57.
Wesley Snipes correspondent, Pete LePage.
This might be referring to, there was a thing that maybe leaked, maybe true, maybe not, about Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man coming out next January or February, and Wonder Man, Eyes of Wakanda, and something else that I'm blanking on coming out also over 2025. Frederico, if you want to clarify the comments, please do. But as is, I think same as with the Blade thing, they're just kind of throwing things out there to claim the spots.
Yeah.
And then they're going to see what happens. That's pretty much it.
That's the way I am with my stuff too, you know. I'm always claiming weekends.
Claiming weekends. You just don't want people to take it. This is from Bad Guys on Twitch. DC's absolute line or Marvel's Ultimates line, and why?
Ooh, love that spicy question.
Very good.
Absolute.
Absolute.
Really?
Wow. No hesitation. Why, Pete?
Why?
I love vodka.
Wow. Not a good answer. Not a good answer to follow that up with. Are you really saying DC absolute above Marvel Ultimate?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, the original kind of Ultimates was awesome, you know, with Bendis. But that's been a minute, and this Absolute line is doing some fun stuff.
I would say this is as good a start as not a good answer, but I will try to make a choice by the end. It's really hard to tell off of two issues on the Absolute line. Like, first issues of Absolute Batman and Absolute Wonder Woman were great, but it's hard to judge the entire line versus, at this point, I think in December they're hitting a year of the Ultimate line, right? So my feeling right now is maybe the Absolute line, just because I thought those were like both huge, gorgeous swings right out of the gate versus looking at the Ultimate line. Ultimate Spider-Man has been very good, but for me it's been a slow burn upwards, which is great. I've enjoyed it more issue by issue. Ultimate X-Men, gorgeous, but I'm not 100% sure what the story is there. Ultimate Black Panther is a good Black Panther story.
Yeah, what it really was.
Is, but is, I'm continues. Not 100%
not super
sure.
Ultimate.
Not super Ultimate. The Ultimates, I think, has been great.
Like, yes.
That's been top tier for me.
Well,
but,
and
go ahead, Justin. Okay. Well, I'm just blathering at this point.
I'm jumping in on you because I think we're a little bit similar in that I think Absolute is swinging harder, and that's a little bit more exciting across the board. I agree. I think Ultimate Spider-Man has been excellent. Dennis Camp's Ultimates is probably my favorite of the line now. I think that's just – that is swinging the hardest of all of them, I think, and doesn't feel at all like it's treading water while some of the other ones do. So I guess my answer is just Absolute, but I do like both of these lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, hard to judge on two issues. Maybe come back to us in a couple of months and we'll revisit that because I like this question. Good one. Nat Townsend says, what are some comics themed Halloween costumes that you have done in the past or costumes you would like to do?
I did a full shift waiting tables in a Flash spandex uniform like 15 years ago. And so that was a strong choice at a French bistro-style restaurant.
Did you have a codpiece in? Like, how close of the spandex was it? I mean,
not necessary.
Okay. All right.
Not necessary.
Yeah. Justin's junk is very hard.
Yeah, like, just... exactly. Personal codpiece.
Yeah.
I just have my own sort of organic. Let's call it organic. Cartilage.
Just organic, period.
Cartilage.
1 year, me and my family, we did Gotham City costumes. I dressed up as Commissioner Gordon. My daughter was Batgirl. My son...
was the Signal?
No. My wife was the Signal, actually.
I knew somebody was.
My wife was the Signal. I think my son was Batman. I think he dressed up as Batman. I don't remember, though. But, yeah, she created a Signal that she was wearing that would light up, which was pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Shoikler says, Alex, did you miss a couple early questions? I don't think so.
It seems like you did.
I'm sure Schreckler put a question up there. Let me see. Oh, here we go. Okay. In the spirit of Hattush, what are the best and worst examples of title graphics in comics?
Wow.
Schreckler, keeping them honest.
I mean, I think, what was the comic, Alex? You know this because you hold it up always as a worst comic ever, but Superman and Batman versus Vampires and Werewolves?
Yeah.
That's a bad title, and graphically it was poorly made.
I will say this. I've gotten kind of used to it by seeing it enough, but one big knock I'd give on the Absolute line, I hate the cover design. Like, I just do not like the cover design at all.
Oh, interesting.
They flip the corner box to the other side so that the title is off-center, which I assume is supposed to give you a sense of, like, this is a different universe. It's off kilter. It's a little bit weird. But as a person who's been reading comic books my entire life, seeing that, I'm like, no, that looks wrong. That looks not, intriguing. It looks incorrect to me. So don't love that. Though I do like the actual designs themselves. The logos are good. It's just the positioning that's weird.
I would say there's a lot more colons in comics these days. And I think we don't need as many of those.
Less colon cancer. I hear you, man.
Pete.
Wow.
Stray Bullet says, if you had to get a comic book themed tattoo, forced to do so, what tattoo?
Forced?
Yeah, like, not, you can't opt out of this. You have to get a comic book tattoo. What are you getting?
Great question.
I don't know. That's tough. I don't have any tattoos, so that would be a huge...
So you're what you have there is a blank canvas, Pete.
Yeah, that's right. And I've gone this far, so it'd be kind of crazy to
start. No, but
start
what
now.
He's saying here is you can't opt out. You have to answer this question.
I don't know. I think maybe I made a Hellboy t-shirt on one of my favorite Hellboy panels, so maybe I would get that tattooed.
That's a crazy elaborate.
That's a strong choice.
I will never get a tattoo to tattoo an entire panel of a comic book on me.
Yeah. It's Pete. I think you would get the Punisher symbol, and then I will have prepaid for him to draw a Frankencastle version of that on your body.
Oh man! And then we would I would have to talk to your family about how you're no longer going to be a part of the family, and then I would murder you.
Do you know what you should get, Pete?
That's nice.
Real, is you should get a thing where it looks like Wolverine has slashed your chest, like you got the three claw marks on there, and you can see the bones through it.
Oh, that's sick.
I mean, that sounds fun. Kind of over there, the Wolverine with the different images on the claws, you know, that would be a fun one, too.
Nat, by the way, says, does the new IDW logo count? And he was talking about the other conversation, but I would 100% get the new IDW logo.
Yeah, exactly. Really good. Nice. Really open the door for questions.
I guess I would have to get Alex the Doctor from Lock and Key tattooed your back.
Myself?
All over your back.
Oh, like Voldemort style. So when I turn around, I have another face back there.
Yes. Yeah, smart. Exactly. That is what Voldemort style means. I guess I would get Ice Cream Man just peeking up over my collar of my shirt.
Ooh.
That would be pretty sweet. This is from Michael T. I just received my Daniel Warren Johnson Extremity Artist Edition, and it's awesome. Do you guys have any fave artist edition books? This isn't an artist edition book, but they announced yesterday that in stores today is a version of Alex Ross's Fantastic Four Full Circle. That it was originally 64 pages. Now it's like 352 pages with sketches and art and commentary from him. So I don't know. That sounds pretty wild. I'd love to check that out. And did I miss somebody mention David Mazzucchelli's Batman Year One? Because apparently that's incredible.
Yes. I don't know if anybody mentioned that, but that is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, you might have just been thinking that and then you just said it out loud. So I don't know what happened there. But yeah, anything by Daniel Warren Johnson is pretty money. So.
All right, and that is it for your audience.
Wait, there's one I wanted to address here.
Corey Cherry says, I'd like to take Pete's comic book quiz.
Just to be clear, we're asking wrong, okay? There are three options, but they all start the same way. You guys are putting something ahead of it, where if you just ask for the quiz... Then I ask the password, and then you say the specific.
Wait, I'm sorry. So potentially they'd be like Pete's comic book quiz, and they'd get it, but I'd like to take Pete's comic book quiz, and they can't get it?
Well.
Comic book quiz now?
Yeah, you would say, I'd like to take the secret quiz, and then I would say, what's the password? And then you go from there.
When is that a rule? That's the first
Why is it very specific?
If you
what are you,
the
fucking
the right
Sphinx?
Thing,
why does it have to be worded exactly?
If you don't say the right thing, you can't. That's the whole point of the quiz. You gotta.
What are you, my insurance
it.
Company? I have to do everything perfectly, or else
that's
it's
right.
a problem.
Otherwise, we're denying your claim, and you got to pay out of pocket. So that's
feels to accurate.
All right, great. Thanks for clarifying this thing that made it actually more confusing. I appreciate it. All right, why don't we move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Because if you had $25, you'd probably go to a comic book shop. And we want to support that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to play trivia, you can today because we actually have a contestant in the stream waiting.
Oh,
Nat Tassel.
Oh, hell yeah.
Play trivia.
What's up? It's me, Dogman.
Oh, yes. Popular comic book character, Dogman. There we go.
Exactly. Happy Halloween. Sorry to spook you guys so much.
Oh, yeah. Dogman's getting older. He seems to need glasses.
He does need glasses.
Yeah. Real quick, created Dogman?
Was birthed immaculately, Christ-like himself into the middle grade fiction marketplace.
I believe that's yearning
for his embrace.
Dogman. No, it was. I'm sorry, you've lost the quiz. It was Dave Pilkey, but
I knew it was one of those guys.
Dogman, do you have any boiling mitts laying around you that you want to show off at all, or no?
Well, if you would like to see where I am right now, I do have my entire office that's still in boxes, dog boxes. That is to say,
yes, dog boxes for the dog office,
dog house, and everything I own is now here, including.
It looks
several
like
long
the
boxes
house.
Coming.
Hey, hi, look at that. Yeah, nerd life, baby. I love it.
Yep.
Love
this
to
is sort
see
of
that.
My nerd wall, but it's on the floor.
Yeah, nerd floor.
And here's the piles of things I got at New York Comic Con at random locations. And for example, this prize that I won playing pachinko at New York Comic Con, a box. With
Shredder box. That is cool.
Yeah.
And this was at the Apple TV cool. Plus pachinko booth, right?
This was exactly.
Do you put papers in there and it shreds it?
I'll be honest. I did expect there to be something inside the box. No, the box was the gift.
Oh,
wow.
That's
Shredder
Comic-Con,
is
game.
The gift.
Another Shredder empty gift. Promise from Shredder.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I did also receive this original Spider-Man Funko Pop for appearing on stage with our good friend Langston Belton.
Hey,
at the Marvel
Langston! Booth. Love that.
Yeah, I wore a costume where I had, worse than my current one, where I was the amazing bag man. And I had a bag over my head the whole time. And so I just kept grabbing Langston's arm because I thought I was going to fall off the stage.
Wow. And, great performative costume.
I was fine, but I felt it was a fun time to make him scared. Yeah,
we should also say, Nat, it was your birthday very recently.
That's true. That's true. For which I received this book, Spider-Man Life Story by Chip Zdarsky. And Mark Bagley. Don't let me spell Mark Bagley short. Thank you so much. It was my birthday this Sunday. And I went to the art museum. I took in some art. I read some comics.
Okay, we don't need your life story.
Thank
That's
you.
Fine.
No. And then I'll tell you where I was in Agatha when I left off.
Okay.
Sorry, I'd like to take the
trivia
public comic book quiz.
Okay, great. Today's trivia.
I'd like to take the part that like the non-secret
trying to do that. Trying
the
to do
easy
that.
One.
Today's yes. trivia is about
I'd like
the...
to take
Good.
Today's trivia is about the impressive comic book series Usagi Yojimbo and a small nod to the legend Dame Maggie Smith, RIP Professor McGonagall. All right, here we go. Please listen to all three options before making your selection, Nat. Question number one. This is one of the longest running ongoing series of all time. What year did it start? Is it A, 1984? B, James, stop talking about your dam. C, Jim Beaver.
I didn't really hear all of them, but I'm going to go with A, 1984.
A is correct.
Wow, yes. Look at this. Oh, that look at correct. The celebration happening from Nat over there.
All right, question number two. It has won an Eisner 10 times. How many times was it nominated? Is it A, 10, easy math, B, 20 times and has won 2 Harvey Awards, or C, Harvey Keitel?
Great.
I'm not sure where the cutoff between the answers were, but I'm going to go with B, it's been nominated 20 times.
That's right. That
is correct. I liked it because it added more information to the answer of the joke. Yeah.
Yeah, B is correct. Yeah. Here we go, last one.
Let me try to get the full text. Thank you.
Fun fact, Stan Sakai also wrote an issue of blank. Is it A, Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, B, Hey Prue, which one of these two homes is yours, C, Prudence Wright Holmes?
God. It's
such a window into the psychosis of Pete LePage.
There's just a free association happening in real time that is, it's very telling. It's very beautiful insight into the creative process. I'm going to say, for the win, A.
Yeah, nice job. You did it, man.
For the win, calling his shot.
Wow. Congratulations. Matt Thompson, real life winner. Yeah.
Wow, look and Pete pre-dropped off the trophy, the tribute trophy.
Congratulations, Nat. You are going to get a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. And Pete, what was the secret movie?
Well, of course, we're talking about the 1992 banger Sister Act. Come on.
Finally, an honorific worthy of the dame herself.
That's right.
She is back in the habit of being dead.
Nat, thank you so much for coming in. Congratulations. Please clean up your apartment.
Great to see
you,
Nat.
Thank you for having me. Next time you see me, it'll be a beautiful comic book museum.
That's awesome. Good night, Nat. Great news. Later.
All right, there we go.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Before we wrap up here, new comics coming out tomorrow. What are you guys looking forward to that's coming out?
Well, as you know, we haven't read any of these yet, but I am looking forward to Poison Ivy's Swamp Thing, Feral Trees. That should be exciting. As well as Batman, The Long Halloween, The Last Halloween, number 2, and Wolverine Revenge, number 3.
Yeah, that guy's mad. It's about time he got back at somebody.
Back in the habit. What about you, Justin?
I believe that the final issue of Zeb Wells' run on Spidey comes out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about that. That's been a comic that we've talked about a lot with some good vibes and some bad vibes. But it's always nice to see. I think he's written this for how many years now? Like 4 or 5 years? Really? Like, it's exciting to see someone. I believe so. Or no, I guess it's like half. It's every 2 weeks.
Half of our lifetimes.
Yeah, it's more like 2 to 3 years, I think. Yeah, but excited to see how Zeb wraps that up. And let me also shout out something that Alex is probably wanting to say for himself, but Feral number 7, mm-hmm. A comic that we have been loving, which is like a zombie-style comic if the main characters are cuddly pets. It has been simultaneously cute and terrifying and very emotional and dramatic. And there's... a big twist and turn from the previous issue that I want to see what happens.
A couple of things that I'm looking forward to. Definitely looking forward to that. I'll just, oh my gosh, I'm missing a Nice House by the Sea, number 4, first book under the new DC Vertigo label. It's not going to really change much, but excited to see that in the comic book shop. Also, Uncanny Valley, number 6, another Tony Fleeks book.
Yes.
Fleekers.
Fleeks at Fleeks.
It's Fleeks week here at the comic book shop. Really liking that cartoon mashup. That's very cool. And one thing I'll mention about Feral, if you're on the fence about it, go into your local comic book shop and look at the back cover of this week's issue and let me know what you think. Tease that over there. That's it. And folks, all of those are going to be in our Stack podcast that comes out Wednesday, 9 a.m., both in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Matt Wagner and Kelly Jones for coming on to talk about Dracula Book 2, The Brides on Kickstarter until November 1st. Caroline Cash for talking about Pee Pee Poo Poo, number 1.
So fun.
Which is from Silver Sprocket. That is available now. Next week, we are not going to have a show. There's going to be no live show.
What?
Because of the election.
Oh, go vote.
Go vote.
Please go vote. Go vote. Early voting is open most places now. It's going to be a clusterfuck on election day. So if you can't do it early, please, please, please do. But we're going to be back on November 12th, the big show. James Robinson and Jay Bone are going to be here.
Yeah.
Talk about a Welcome to Maynard. Wendy Martin for talking about Castle Swimmer. And Adam Barnard to talk about House of Haunts. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, Monday through Friday, every day of the week. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, talking about Agatha all along. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, talking about the Penguin. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. To support this show and all the shows we do, you can subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah. Good night, folks.